Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum.
And I am Matt Levine.
And we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts, with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody. Hey, Matt, we're here with more people willing to tolerate us and come on our show.
Indeed, we are. A very special welcome to Bill and Tom from the Frankenstein Minute podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
So Matt and I have done a lot to, we've talked about you all a lot for the past few episodes. Oh, see,
now nobody's going to be tuning in.
The inevitable letdown.
You've been warned because we are the podcast that dissects the Universal Frankenstein film series minute by minute. And I am Tom Lang.
And I'm Bill Evenson. And you've joined us for, I don't know what it is. But we usually say, and you've joined us for minute
whatever,
yeah. 72 of Ghost of Frankenstein. We haven't gotten that far yet, though.
No,
we're doing the Universal Frankenstein film series minute by minute, as Tom said. And we're up to Son of Frankenstein, the third film in the series, minute like 90, somewhere around.
Yeah, we got 89 and 90 coming up. So we're almost to the end of that one. That's a long one. We've been living with that one for 2 years.
So. 90 weeks is a lot. 90. Well, it's 100.
100 minutes. Actually, 100 minutes. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's 100 weeks to talk about one film.
Yep.
Minute by minute. Yeah.
Wow. And you're living with it like day in, day out. One of my favorite things about the episodes of your podcast that I've listened to, like, it seems like you're kind of just like having fun. Like, it's really funny. I was laughing out loud. Like, thank you're just kind of hanging out. And then all of a sudden you talk about like the production of the movie and like some of the like deeper elements of the narrative and like the, you know, visual style and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, like there's actually, this is a real conversation. Like, it's not just hanging out on a podcast, which is great. So yeah, it's awesome. If you, for all of our listeners out there, if you haven't heard Frankenstein Minute, check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Do you think you'll ever get to Frankenstein Conquers the World on your show? Or is that
honestly, after watching it for this? Yeah. Yeah, it's on the list.
We'll do both versions too. So we're going to live with that one for a very long time.
I mean, we could do a commentary as a bonus episode.
We could do
Not a bad
idea.
But we have no plans to go outside the Universal series. So that's Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Son of Frankenstein, Ghost of Frankenstein, Frankenstein Meets the Wolf Man, House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, Abbott and Costello. I'm sorry,
I don't know what you're talking
about. Bud Abbott, Lou Costello Meet Frankenstein. And then we're also counting Young Frankenstein just because we're fans more than anything. But it's also a Universal picture.
Well, it's not. It's a 20th Century Fox picture. But
Well, that's why we're But that's why Tom's on to correct me.
But they use the same set.
They did use the European village films that stuff appears in. The last, sadly, is Blackenstein from the following year.
Mm.
Wow.
We're not doing that one then?
You know, I'm game. I've got probably 2-3 copies of it here.
Blackenstein Minute.
Yeah.
Why not?
I've heard of Blackula, but I have not heard of Blackenstein.
There's a good reason.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm morbidly curious, I guess. I'm intrigued.
There you go.
You know, it's get together and, you know, MST3K it or something.
There you go.
Matt, we're going to bring another Frankenstein movie to the show at some point, right?
Yeah, Flesh for Frankenstein.
Oh, my God. I love that movie.
Yeah, notoriously sleazy, like filled with sex and violence. I have to admit, I've never seen it before, but it's produced by Andy Warhol, directed by Paul Morrissey, I think, right?
I don't think Andy Warhol had much of anything to do with it other than Andy Warhol Presents. The name lent the marquee value, I'm sure.
Well, that's pretty helpful for a filmmaker, probably. Oh, yeah. Hey, do you mind if I put Andy Warhol Presents on the beginning of your... Yeah, sounds good to me.
Whatever.
from now on, we should do Andy Warhol Presents Camp Kaiju. It makes no sense. Can't hurt, right?
I don't know. I don't know if Andy could sign off on it, but I'll give you my name if you want to do
Bill Evenson's Camp Kaiju.
It's going to be a good conversation tonight. I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you all for hanging out there listening. Please rate and review wherever you do listen. You can also share this podcast with a friend. You can check out our website, campkaijumoviereviews.com, and our Patreon, where you can enjoy all sorts of perks, merchandise, and special content, depending on the tier you choose. So check it out, see if it's something up your alley, and either way, we appreciate the support. Speaking of patrons, we have some we need to thank right now. Kelly, Chris, and Frank, we appreciate your support. And we hope you enjoy the first ever two-person Gamera Gong.
Oh my God! Are you ready?
I think we agreed, Tom. You're gonna swing the whatever
swing the mallet.
The mallet, and I'm gonna sing T-Rex at you.
Okay.
For support.
There we go.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes. Here goes.
Were you Willie and Wheat? What are the sweet clad in black? Oh,
oh my words. God.
Yeah, there it goes.
That worked real well.
It turned out really well. I think because your anger at me for forgetting all the lyrics really helped.
All right. Matt, tell the folks at home what we got coming up on Camp Kaiju.
Yeah, so we have Mothra March Madness coming up. First of all, yeah, I did want to follow up on what Tom said. Just, you know, he's recovering from shoulder surgery. Get better soon, Tom. And thanks for joining us tonight. I didn't want to completely like not respond to that at all. So thank you.
I'm trying to ignore it myself. So.
But yes, no, March is very exciting here on Camp Kaiju. We're going to have Mothra March Madness coming up. We'll be talking about Mothra as well as Mothra versus Godzilla. We might have a sort of special bracket for Mothra March Madness as well. More details on that to come. Might be sort of a fun social media game for all of our, you know, followers out there. So yeah, Mothra all month long coming up. Check it out.
And real quick, Matt, I have some ideas for our patrons, some exclusive bracket Ooh. Content.
I love it. Sorry,
like we're gonna steal the bracket.
Yeah, we're gonna steal all your gimmicks. Yep. This is perfect. We've already got a gong. We're figuring out.
Yep. Damn it, trade secrets.
Yes. See what happens when you let just anybody in.
I think Mothra's probably pretty lucky if you're a Mothra fan. There's a lot of high quality films that have Mothra in them.
Yeah, even the ones from the 90s are pretty good.
I'm excited personally because this is a good opportunity for me to catch up a little bit. I'm not familiar with a lot of Mothra stuff, to be honest, but the main reason I love Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster so much is the Mothra scenes in that movie, which are just like mind-blowingly weird to me. So I'm so excited for Mothra March Madness. Can't wait.
All right. One more thing I just want to plug coming up. We have a special three-part series called Frozen with Fear. Two Coast Guardsmen down in McMurdo Station, Antarctica. Have a lot of time on their hands, and they are going to record a three-part series for Camp Kaiju where they talk about Alien versus Predator, John Carpenter's The Thing, and 2011's The Thing. Wow, so stay tuned. That'll be a Patreon exclusive.
That's impressive.
Yeah. It's my brother. He's in the Coast Guard down there.
Okay. It's still impressive.
What do you mean? But he's down there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
They spend 6 months down there breaking ice. Oof. For research vessels.
I just want to hear about his experience down there and like the other Coast Guardsman that's going to be joining. Like, you know, the monster conversation will be great, but I also just want to hear about like their life and like being stationed down there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
Like, has he encountered either the alien or the predator from Alien versus Predator? That's what I want to know.
I want to know if there's a dog running around there at all.
Yeah, that might be a little something to keep an eye out.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that, everybody. That'll be a Patreon exclusive, but I'll be sharing clips to the masses for sure. Bill, we could start. What's your personal history with Frankenstein Conquers the World?
I'm the best one to start with. My personal history is a local podcast called Camp Kaiju asked if I would talk about it. So I had to watch it. I had never seen the film. I've seen War of the Gargantuas several times, but I guess I'd always gotten the impression that Frankenstein Conquers the World was the lesser, I almost said prequel, but the lesser film that begat War of the Gargantuas. And not to spoil anything, but I was pleasantly delighted with the film. But I am a kaiju fan and a Gargantua fan going into it.
Yeah, this would pop up a lot on local television in the 70s when I was a card-carrying monster kid. So it would, it'd be on in a Saturday afternoon, and you'd come in halfway through and like, what the heck is this and what's going on? And I know I saw it when I was very young. I saw the ending of it, and I remember the real vivid climax that it has. I didn't know for the longest time what it was. And then I actually skipped school to watch it on Mel's Matinee, because you get the Sunday paper, race to the TV guide section and mark all the movies that were on. And it was like a Wednesday afternoon, like 1 to 3. And I had to be sick because I'll never get to see it again.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm definitely a kaiju fan, and I thought it was great. War of the Gargantuas is another favorite. And when we were doing Horror Incorporated locally, that was the film that I got the most requests for, was War of the Gargantuas. And unfortunately, it wasn't in the package that I could show.
I was sending in a lot of requests in those days.
Was that you? Oh, okay.
That was me every time.
A different pseudonym for each letter.
Yes. Oh, I wish I was that clever.
Yes. Who is this guy?
I didn't really know a lot about this movie. Growing up, I was a big fan of the Universal Monster movies. So I love Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, all that stuff. But, kind of came to kaiju movies sort of belatedly thanks to this podcast and Vincent's invitation for me to join the podcast several years ago. I was more familiar with Frankenstein than Barragon, or even, I had seen Godzilla, but most of the kaiju monsters I didn't know all that well. So, not very familiar with this movie at all. Vincent, when you first told me about it and when I first started reading about it, like, just the concept is so ridiculous and bizarre and out there. I was like, I need to see this movie as soon as possible. So I'm glad this podcast finally, motivated me to do so.
I had heard about this movie, but like a lot of non-Godzilla Toho movies, it just was never readily accessible. And even now, I found it on the Internet Archive. That's where I watched it, because the DVD is, I wouldn't say it's not affordable, but it's not $5.
It's long out of print, so yeah, you'll pay top dollar.
There you go. It's one of the more weirder kaiju movies I've seen. For good, I would say it's one of its strengths, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So during World War II in Nazi Germany, Nazi officers confiscate the living heart of the Frankenstein monster from a Dr. Reisendorf and pass it on to the Imperial Japanese Navy, who take it to a research facility in Hiroshima for further experimentation. As the experiments begin, Hiroshima is bombed with a nuclear weapon by the Americans.
15 years later, a feral boy runs rampant in the streets of Hiroshima, catching and devouring small animals. This comes to the attention of American scientist Dr. James Bowen and his colleagues, Drs. Sueko Togami and Kenichiro Kawaji. Bowen and his team find and take care of the boy. They discover that he is building a strong resistance to radiation. The former Imperial Navy officer Kawai, who brought the heart to Hiroshima's Army Hospital, is now working in an oil factory in Akita when it is attacked by an underground monster named Barragon.
Meanwhile, Bowen and his team find out that the strange boy is growing in size. Afraid of his strength, the scientists lock and chain the boy in a cage. Bowen is visited by Kawai, who tells him that the boy could have grown from the heart of the Frankenstein monster. At Bowen's advice, Kawaji confers with Reisendorf in Frankfurt. Reisendorf recommends cutting off a limb speculating that a new one will grow back. Suiko and Bowen strongly object to this method.
Koichi visits Frankenstein, but is interrupted by a TV crew who enrage the boy with bright lights. Frankenstein breaks loose and pays a visit to Suiko at her apartment before disappearing. An independently moving severed hand of Frankenstein's is found, proving Reisendorf's theory.
Unbeknownst to Bowen and his team, the subterranean burrowing monster Baragon ravages various villages. The Japanese authorities and media believe this to be Frankenstein's doing, and Frankenstein narrowly escapes being hunted down by the Japanese self-defense forces. Kawai returns and reports that Frankenstein may not be responsible for the disasters. It could be Baragon. He tries to convince the authorities, but to no avail.
Bowen, Suiko, and Kawaji attempt to find Frankenstein on their own. To Bowen and Suiko's shock, Kawaji reveals his plans to kill Frankenstein by blinding him with grenades in order to recover his heart and his brain. Kawaji presses on to find Frankenstein, but finds Baragon instead. Frankenstein emerges in time to save Suiko and engages Baragon in combat. In the end, the ground beneath them collapses and swallows them up. Kawaji states that the immortal heart will live on, and they may one day see him again, but Bowen believes that Frankenstein is better off dead.
I don't know. That's not the ending I saw. This is actually true. The first version I found has the other ending. You guys know about this.
With the octopus?
With the octopus.
You saw the octopus one?
Yeah, I have the octopus one if you need it. Yeah, I think it's pretty great.
It's on here as well. They have both international and domestic Japanese versions, and then the U.S. version. And the international Japanese version has the octopus.
Wow.
I just happened to find that when I watched it, and I didn't know any of the history of it. So I thought that it was just another crazy thing that happened in this movie. I actually bought into it. I was like, yeah, sure. Octopus. They did film that alternate scene that I don't know if it was ever even shown in a movie theater anywhere.
Yeah, from what I understand, it wasn't. Henry Saperstein wanted it included, and apparently saner heads prevailed at some point.
Damn saner heads.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I found it kind of jarring because it's like the movie's over, then this whole other thing starts to happen.
I can see that. I do like that they kept an octopus for War of the Gargantuas in the beginning of that movie.
It's used much better there.
Yeah.
I think that convinced me, though, to drop like $60, $70 on that DVD to see that octopus ending. I feel like it's worth it.
It might be.
Yeah. Or I could just email you mine.
Yeah, that sounds better, yeah.
In terms of Frankenstein versus Frankenstein's monster, the naming convention, how are we going to approach this?
They kind of use it interchangeably in the movie.
Well, mostly they say Frankenstein.
They say Frankenstein, referring to the monster.
There's like one scene where they refer to Frankenstein as the guy who sewed up the monster.
Yeah, they sort of do a bastardized version of the novel really quickly. We've been calling him Frankenstein just as a joke on our podcast, simply because we think it's funny. And to piss people off that get really pedantic about it.
I personally don't have a strong feeling either way. Like, I feel like we could follow the template that the movie lays down and just refer to it as Frankenstein.
I think we should do that.
I think we should do that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is what happens in the movie. I think it would be jarring at this point for us to refer to Frankenstein as anything else. Because they call him Frankenstein through almost the whole movie.
Through the whole movie. Yeah.
If Dr. Frankenstein himself was a character, we could make that
distinction. It's
true, but he's not.
He's not. In fact, they even at one point say something like, "Do you ever read that old story?"
It's almost like a meta sort of reference to the novel.
Yeah. So
it's a really bizarre movie.
I don't know. Yeah, the state of the Frankenstein myth in this movie, but
yeah, it's pretty shaky. But that's fine. It's part of
the weirder Frankenstein movies.
Toho really wanted to make a Frankenstein movie.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to get it with King Kong and then with Godzilla. Those didn't work out, so they made King Kong versus Godzilla.
It goes back to 1961 too, when they were wanting to bring back Godzilla in a big way. A producer by the name of John Beck had pretty much swiped a treatment from Willis O'Brien, the man who did the special effects in King Kong, basically created King Kong, had a treatment of King Kong versus Frankenstein. And it sounds pretty whacked out as it is. Frankenstein is living in Africa in the jungle. So he creates this creature called the Gecko that ultimately then spars with King Kong. John Beck's like, yeah, I'll shop that around for you. I basically shut O'Brien out completely. And he brings it to Toho, and Toho's like, yeah, that's great, except no, it's Godzilla, not Frankenstein.
That's amazing that you get Willis O'Brien in on this crazy saga too.
Yeah, and apparently when King Kong versus Godzilla premiered, he like openly wept at what was done with his creation.
Oh no.
He was so offended.
But he loved King Kong Escapes.
Oh yeah, that was just, yeah.
My favorite anecdote with King Kong versus Godzilla is, you know, how crazy it seemed, so seemingly absurd, that King Kong gets his powers from the lightning bolts in that movie, that was originally supposed to be Frankenstein monster.
Correct.
Getting the charge from the electricity.
Yep.
So they swapped out the monster, but kept the same convention.
These movies are so strange, which is, you know, I think why we love them. So, you know, looking for logic is kind of a fool's journey, I think.
Well, don't they carry that forward into Godzilla versus the Sea Monster? Was that originally a King Kong? Because he gets his energy.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It just goes on and on.
It's like, I love, you know, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster. Well, I don't, but I love Godzilla. But I think I would love that movie more if it was Kong.
It would. It would make more sense, definitely, more logically. And this was actually supposed to be Frankenstein versus Godzilla initially, when it first went into production, and Toho thought, well, you know, Godzilla's now this hero, defender of the Earth, so that makes Frankenstein the villain. They wanted Frankenstein to be much more sympathetic, so they came up with Baragon as an alternate.
Yeah.
Which I think was really smart.
For sure. I feel like, yeah, because it
kept the scale down a little bit too, so some of the effects are a little bit better because the models are bigger.
That's true. And then if you had Godzilla in it, he would just steal thunder from Frankenstein.
Absolutely.
I almost feel like Frankenstein is kind of like a stand-in for Godzilla in this movie, and Frankenstein conquers the world. Like, he's born out of like man's, you know, sort of godlike megalomania, and he's kind of a cautionary tale. Like, even some of the shots of like Frankenstein emerging from the sea in slow motion, at times I was like, wow, Frankenstein just is Godzilla in this movie.
Yeah, basically. A little bit. Yeah. So I think the first draft that was written was with Godzilla. So it's just a matter of replacing one with the other and tweaking it here and there.
You know, I was thinking about one of the things about this film is that it has such a, it actually just blatantly references World War II. But Godzilla's birth isn't all that far removed from Hiroshima at least when we look back on it. Although I know there's a different event in particular that birthed Godzilla, but they're both kind of from that same
right.
Yeah,
this is the only
same mushroom cloud.
The only kaiju film I'm aware of that directly references Hiroshima and actually shows it very vividly.
Or even references World War II.
World War II, really, yeah.
A kaiju film.
Yeah, I did not expect Nazis at the beginning of this movie.
I mean, it's the first thing you see.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It was insane. I was like, who was involved in this motion picture? Ishiro Honda at the helm. He had just directed the previous year Mothra versus Godzilla and Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. So he was, you know, back-to-back hits. This was prime Honda kaiju time.
Well, Honda's the go-to guy. You know you're going to get at least a film of quality. You know, his worst films get a lot of stick in the Godzilla series. We all know which ones I'm talking about. But they still reach a certain level of, craft.
I think there's only one that really sticks, like you say.
And even that one, even that one's kind of a good movie. It's just a little silly.
It's not a good Godzilla movie, but it has a nice little message. We're talking about Godzilla's Revenge.
I was going to say Space Amoeba.
Oh, wow. That's a whole other thing.
Well, E.G. Tsuburaya is also back with this movie, the special effects wizard at Toho, and music by Akira Ifukube. So if Honda is, if you can't go wrong with Honda, I really don't think you can go wrong with all three of those guys in the same room.
Yeah, that's the trifecta right there.
Yeah.
And Tanaka as the producer.
Tsuburaya's effects are great in this one. There's some great night scenes, which always helps, I think. But they work just as well during the day. The only thing I would say about the Ifukube score, which is perfect, I love it, but I think some of it's reused, is the Frankenstein theme, maybe also the Rodan theme, I think I've heard.
I think so.
But I don't care about that kind of stuff. It's reuse it. If it's great, use it.
You know, Universal did that all the time. The Wolfman theme. The Wolfman theme wasn't even written for the Wolfman. It's from another film. So that's nothing new. And I mean, I'm not that musically inclined to even care. You know,
right. Only if you've seen these movies a bunch of times.
You start to recognize. Yeah.
I think the thing to be taken away from the Ifukube score, since it sounds like, if it sounds like I'm trashing it, it's quite the opposite. I feel like he classes up all the movies he does the scores for.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you get Creature from the Black Lagoon cues in King Kong versus Godzilla, where they're really, really jarring in there.
Yeah. So this movie has Nick Adams in it, which is different. He was in two other Toho movies.
Tadao Takashima as Dr. Kenichiro Kawaji. He was in several other kaiju films as well. King Kong versus Godzilla. Atragon, Son of Godzilla, previously featured on Camp Kaiju, which Vincent and I kind of disagreed on a little bit. One of our few, you know, I don't want to say strong disagreements, but I feel like you liked Son of Godzilla a bit more than I did. But anyway, getting off topic. Takashima was also in Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, so he's in numerous other kaiju films as well. We have Kumi Mizuno as well as Dr. Sueko Togami. She also played Nick Adams' love interest in Invasion of Astro Monster, and she's in several other Honda films, including Matango, Gorath, and The War of the Gargantuas.
And she's not the same character in The War of the Gargantuas. She is, more or less. But
it's like a different name.
You thought it was a sequel, they changed her name.
Yeah.
Like, it's the loosest of sequels I've ever seen.
Probably.
Just as good, if not better.
It's a little better, I think.
But, I think so, too. Yeah. But I wish there was a stronger connection.
You know, I had a huge crush on her when I was a kid, too.
So did Nick Adams, from what
apparently, to the detriment of his marriage. Yeah,
yeah. Mm.
Interesting. How do we feel about those other Honda films like Matango and Gorath? Are they not among his finest, perhaps?
You know, like I said, they're all going to be entertaining in their way. Yeah, they're not certainly top tier, but they're worth a look anyway if you can find them.
I haven't seen Gorath, but Matango is one of my favorite movies of this. Of Toho at this era, it's more low key. It's more of a horror movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It's got a little darker tone to it.
It's got a lot of dread and atmosphere to it.
Yep.
Matt, I think you'd like it a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like I would.
I think Honda, he leans into the horror a bit with Frankenstein Conquers the World,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a strength of the movie. And it reminds me of something like Matango.
Yeah. And then, Tsuburaya kind of cuts against that by using the patently fake little wild boar and the ridiculous horse puppets. And apparently he loved that shit. He just loved it when stuff looked goofy like that. And Honda was not real particularly fond of it. But, you know, there wasn't much he could do about it.
The horse in particular, I think, because that poor horse is trapped. He's tied up inside that little thing.
Terrified.
And it's just they really do sort of, Honda sort of films it as if as if something horrible is about to happen to this horse, but it's this little thing bouncing around the screen. It looks absurd.
I don't think Honda directed the special effects sequences ever.
Okay.
During that scene with the horse, I didn't know if I should be laughing or crying. Like, is this a tragic?
Well, I think that's kind of, you know, that's what they want. You know, yeah. Tsuburaya, he knew kids saw these movies, so he would do. That's why King Kong looks really, really goofy in King Kong versus Godzilla. And you get little goofy stuff throughout the whole series. Certainly Invasion of the Astro Monsters when Godzilla does that goofy little dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are things that he put in that he just loved. And Honda was not particularly a fan of it. Nor am I, to be honest.
No, it is a little distracting at times.
I'm more of a Godzilla jumping around in smog monster guy myself. Yeah.
I love it all.
I gotta agree.
I think, Vincent, what you said about Honda, like being, you know, predisposed to horror or whatever. I think I would agree with that. And I think one of the reasons I love Rodan so much is because, like, it does such an amazing job building up Red, like the giant, like, larva monsters, the dragonfly larva or whatever. Like, all that stuff is great. And, like, genuinely still kind of shocking, I think.
Yeah, well, and the original Godzilla itself is an example.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Very, very dark film.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's, you know, personally, that I lean a little bit more into the horror than like the sci-fi or fantasy, I guess. So that's right in my sweet spot there.
Yep. Yep.
A couple of other names we want to mention here. We also have Koji Furuhata as Frankenstein. Finally, we have Haruo Nakajima as Baragon. We kind of already briefly alluded to the Tsuburaya's kind of suit work for Baragon, which I think works pretty well in this movie. And Nakajima does a great job at, you know, as the man in the suit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he always did. You know, he was there again, the go-to guy for that kind of thing. It's an unusual, it's a quadruped monster, which other than
doesn't always work.
Yeah, well, because he's, you know, he's on his knees.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like a real quadruped, but it is, it takes a, you know, out of the realm of all the others that are standing upright.
It works well in this case because Frankenstein is clearly just like a man wearing makeup. So like to have the quadruped sort of like, you know, form or whatever for the other monster, you get a little variety in there. I think it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly in the, in, you know, the big battle at the climax, it works to its advantage. Definitely.
Wait till you see the octopus.
Damn it, octopus. All right, BanditsEmporium.com is the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. Check out BanditsEmporium.com or hit the link in our bio to check out their selection of monster-inspired tees. Unfortunately, you won't find a Baragon tee yet, but you will find some Frankenstein tees. So you can check those out, and part of the proceeds go to supporting this show. Visit BanditsEmporium.com. Whatever your style, they have you covered. As they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, we want more Baragon.
Well, I got good news. Next week, destroy all monsters.
All right. 30 seconds worth. As we already talked about, the movie was a co-production between Toho and US studio United Productions of America.
Yep.
And what I found interesting about this film, which I didn't know until after, because this movie, I'm thinking a lot of the nuclear radiation allegories.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and I saw that this was released on the 20th anniversary of the atomic bombs.
Good point.
And I went, that can't be a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Honda, Toho, they clearly had a message they were striving for.
Sure.
And I mean, it goes through all of, well, not all of, but it's obviously in the first Godzilla movie, it's very clear that's a message that they're talking about. But I almost feel like after World War II, you know, their country was taken over by the U.S., right? The U.S. kind of
occupied
Japan for a while. And then right around the time that that ended, they started put out Godzilla, which I feel like it has... They couldn't be so direct. But by the time you get to, is this 64 or 65?
65.
Yeah, they can just go ahead and show the actual bombing of Hiroshima and have esteemed and, you know, one of the best and most esteemed actors in Japanese film history get blown up by by the bomb.
I mean, he's only in it for maybe a minute.
But I mean, as a part of that co-production, as you say, with the U.S., it's interesting to kind of look at how those messages are put out, because obviously from a U.S. standpoint, you might be like, well, you could see where they might downplay the U.S. portion of that. And it's directed head on. They come at it head on. Mm-hmm. Bowen is there because he feels like shit about dropping a bomb in Hiroshima. And I think that's great.
Yeah, there's even like one line of dialogue in particular that's a little bit kind of, I don't want to say heavy-handed exactly, but Bowen says something like, we must turn tragedy into happiness in the future. Mm-hmm. And that's just like so on the nose and direct. It's kind of admirable. Like, this is the theme of the movie, you know? And considering like the political context and historical context, I admire that in this case.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I want to come back to this conversation and the themes. I just want to ask, we're calling it Frankenstein Conquers the World, but as I believe that was the title for the U.S. release in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
So the Japanese release was Frankenstein versus Baragon. Do you have opinions on which title you prefer?
I like Frankenstein Conquers the World better only because it is a great title. It really doesn't matter what movie happens in it when you've got a title like that. Yeah. I think Frankenstein versus Baragon is probably a more accurate.
Definitely more
and,
accurate.
And it's I shouldn't just say accurate. That's being silly. It really fits better.
It does.
But Frankenstein Conquers the World is a better title. You can't beat it.
It is. Yeah, it's... I remember having an issue of Famous Monsters of Filmland, and I don't know if you even are familiar with what that was. Okay, it was the original monster movie magazine.
Yes, yeah.
Started in the 50s and went up until Star Wars pretty much ruined it, along with a lot of other things. But
Tom thinks Star Wars ruined everything.
I don't
know. Those are some shots fired.
No,
I'm kidding.
If you can see the other side of this wall,
yeah, he's got a fair amount of Star Wars
stuff. So, but it was an issue that had, you know, Frankenstein's face scowling on the cover with the, you know, monsterish font that, you know, Frankenstein Conquers the World, and even that was very evocative just by itself. So yeah, I prefer Frankenstein Conquers the World. It's
a little less generic to me.
That's true. Not to mention all the German titles of the Japanese or of the Godzilla films all are Frankenstein.
They're all
versus
Frankenstein,
somebody.
Yeah.
So is this the one where the German title got it right?
It's the only one.
This is the one that started that convention,
I believe.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah.
Or they called this one Godzilla.
The Godzilla conquers the world.
In Germany. No, it's called Gamera. It's weird.
It's called
Gamera
thing.
Conquers the World.
It's the weirdest thing.
It is funny because Frankenstein is very much not trying to conquer the world in this movie. Sort of like you said, Bill.
He just wants to be left the hell alone.
Yeah, he just wants to like eat dogs and hide from people. You know?
Not just dogs.
I love the moment. I was going to bring this up later, but I love the moment where Frankenstein throws a tree at a bird because he's trying to knock the bird out of the sky.
He
accidentally destroys those guys' like hut instead.
That is really great. That is really great. That's really kind of modern, it seems like to me. That's a good joke. And I could see someone making that joke in a movie today. I hope they put it in the next Shin, because apparently they're making another Shin Godzilla 2. I hope he does that. I hope Frankenstein's in it. Shin Frankenstein.
Check the tree at Rodan, maybe. Then we tie it all around again.
Let's move on to themes just a little bit. I wanted to bring up the children and post-war Japan related to those themes of, like, they're living in the wake of, you know, the atomic bombs. And did any of you know this term, hibakusha?
No, I hadn't encountered that.
It's a Japanese term. It literally means people affected by the bomb. Hmm. And a really sad but well-known example is the girl Sadako Sasaki. There's like a book, The Thousand Paper Cranes, and she was born in the wake of the bombs. And she lived for 10 years with leukemia. Like, it developed later in her life. And that's just indicative of so many children born afterwards, but still fell ill to radiation mm-hmm. sickness. And when I watched Frankenstein Conquers the World, I saw the character as this child growing up mm-hmm. with this sickness.
Sure.
This radiation poisoning.
There's the scene towards the beginning of the film. It's the first scene with Nick Adams where they're going through the ward and the people dying. The girl that gives him the pillow, and they're not explicit, but I always read that as she's died as a result of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a touching moment because they say, I think, that she only has like a week left to live or something.
Yeah. And
she...
Yeah. And then the next scene, it's like, oh, well, she's dead.
Right. But yeah, but, and then she embroidered the pillow for this American doctor. It's kind of a poignant, like,
yeah, it's really,
attempt
yeah.
to connect between these two cultures, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it reminded me of the scene in the original Godzilla where, you know, he's tearing Tokyo apart and there's a mom and her two kids huddled in a corner like, well, we'll be with daddy soon. You know, it brought that, it evoked that in my memory.
But again, even though I said it once, as we're talking about this, it's just an amazingly impressive thing for a U.S. production company to co-produce. In 1964.
Yeah, go ahead and you know, be that overt.
There's not a hint of what you were talking about, Tom, that it was justified. Whether it was or I don't want to stumble through the morality issues here.
Right,
but it's
right.
brutal. It's brutal.
It is, yeah.
I've thought that pretty often through a lot of kaiju movies over the years, like all the scenes of villagers being like evacuated in a rush, yeah. like, you know, with like an impending monster attack. I feel like every time implicitly World War II and the dropping of the atomic bombs is kind of the ghost hovering over everything, you know, and maybe because the original Godzilla like raises that allegory. Like every time I see that, that's just the image that is conjured in my mind.
Well, absolutely, because this whole genre wouldn't exist without Godzilla, and that's a very big part of his whole thing. So as goofy as they get, I think there's still that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys like ever think about what other countries say about World War II? Like, what is a Japanese student, how is in their history classes, how is it presented?
Right.
And so when I was watching this movie, I was just fascinated by the whole angle of their alliance with Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, shoot. Like, what's being said here?
In Godzilla, there's hints that Sarazawa, that he worked with the Nazis. There's subtle hints of it in the original Japanese version. You know, it's not something they could deny ever happened. In the Japanese versions, the reason they want the heart is to create soldiers that can't be killed. In the
wow.
in the English version, it's a little more of an altruistic reason.
Oh, I didn't know that. I only watched it, I guess, with subtitles. So what does he say in the English version?
Prolong life or something like
but
that.
But yeah, they're essentially creating soldiers that can't be killed. And the other guy laughs and he says, it's Shimura.
Shimura, so
the man who embodies gravitas says,
yeah, right.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't make narrative sense, I feel like it kind of makes thematic sense. Like the fact that Germany, Japan, and the United States are so, like, they're kind of like the triumvirate of nations in this movie. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like, to me, that raises this theme of like national trauma, which, you know, these three countries have experienced that or inflicted it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So this theme of like, how do you cope with that? Whether you're like, you know, a citizen of that country or if you're an outsider, like who has experienced the negative consequences of that, like how do you forgive or cope with national trauma? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, because like narratively that doesn't make a lot of sense. But like, you know, that theme of like these three nations and what they have had to deal with in the past. It seemed a lot deeper and more interesting than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sorry. I'm just so thrilled that we're having this deep discussion like this, because like I said, I've always just heard nothing much about this movie and I go to watch it and it's in your face about all this stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only place it gets weird is when the young woman who embroiders the pillow dies. And then at least in the version I watched, they cut to a year later. And Bowen says to Kojimi or whatever her name is, that they should go and visit her grave because it's been 1 year since she died. And she jumps up and smiles and they grin and have a big hug.
Yeah,
and I feel like I've missed something.
It's a grand idea. It'll be a day out.
Yeah. What an amazing date.
Anyway. That is not on the dubbed version. Wow. That's
it isn't? Oh my God. In the Japanese version, she leaps out of her seat and gives him a big hug. And they grin and laugh because they're going to go visit her grave.
This will be so much fun.
There's a lot going on. Maybe watch the dub version. I'll send you my octopus dubbed or subtitled version.
I have to see it.
Yeah.
You know, you name the right price and this could be yours.
Too. Tom's going to make a profit off of this.
Either way.
One other thing I just wanted to bring up in the category of sad trauma history is I was fascinated by the medical ethics that are raised in this film, where the German doctor says, just cut off one of his limbs and see if it grows back. And the one Japanese scientist is into that idea. And obviously Bowens and Suiko are not into that idea. And it made me think about, you know, the Nazis' experimentations on human beings, and Japan was guilty of the same war crimes.
Well, the only thing I would think is if you can sort of understand where a nation state gets to the point where they're justifying human experimentation in order to further their goals, and this movie kind of blurs that line, because the guy you're talking about, Kajimi, when he talks about these things, you know, the first thing that happens, like you said, Bowen and Suiko are against it. But he says it all the time. He's like, I just want a finger. I just want some of his flesh. I just want his heart. And at no point does Suiko say, you know, you're a jerk and I don't want to science with you anymore. You're really freaking me out. He's presented as a very sympathetic character.
He is.
And to be honest, it's a little jarring.
He's one of the protagonists, and it's done in a very sort of offhand way, too. There's not a lot of attention drawn to it.
You could see, you could almost, you know, if you do put yourself in his shoes, like, how else could you determine if this was Frankenstein's monster?
Right.
Well, you don't start with an arm. Maybe you cut his hair and see what happens.
See if you can draw another Frankenstein from the hair. Is that?
Or maybe just circumcise him. See what happens. Just see what happens.
What's What's the worst that could happen?
That scene might be in Flesh for Frankenstein, I think.
I'm pretty sure it's probably in that one.
But yeah,
I didn't mean to get religious.
you're stepping on my people now. So
that's right.
It's kind of the theme, right? Of like the price to be paid for scientific knowledge, like and you know, that's in the original Godzilla as well, and a lot of these kaiju movies, I think. Like, at what point does scientific progress you know, veer away from humanity and like no longer have like human benevolence or whatever?
Okay, well, that is the very, very theme of a book that I'm really fond of called Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. That's the heart of the novel right there. Is, you know, it's sort of it's like Jeff Goldblum says in Jurassic Park, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
And I just think that's just another mirror that Honda is holding up to the war crimes of his home country during the war. I mean, they did this unit 731. They did just unspeakable experiments on living humans, just literally like cutting off limbs and seeing what would happen if we did X, Y, and Z.
Well, and I'm blowing off this guy, but when he goes to actually do it, He sneaks in there with I hope this is in the version you guys saw, because everything I mentioned, but he's got the big giant syringe, and he's filled with Mountain Dew, it looks like, but the first thing he does is set it down and grab a small glass and a bottle of whiskey and takes a shot of whiskey, because he's got to steel himself to do something evil. He's going to do wrong.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't do it because somebody else walks in, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the movie, the only reason he's not able to blind Frankenstein and like proceed with his experiment is because Baragon shows up.
Yeah, that's right. Baragon
ruins everything for him.
I missed this. How did the hand become separated from Frankenstein?
He was growing, and the shackles they had on his wrists, you could, there's a scene where they note that they're cutting into his skin.
Okay.
So he just grew to the point where it just lopped it off.
It was a little unclear for me, but I didn't really care because I just got a self-moving hand.
Yeah, no, that's a great Frankenstein trope in and of itself. The severed hand is a big thing. Not so much in Universal, but definitely in Hammer. And there's a very, very similar image in, there was a TV movie in 73, Frankenstein, the True Story. It's actually one of the best adaptions ever of Frankenstein. It's not the true story. It's not the book, but it's brilliantly done. And especially for TV, it looks amazing. But yeah, there's a hand crawling around, and it's not any better of an effect, but that doesn't matter. It's still, it's a hand crawling around on the floor. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
I mean, it's a silly kaiju movie on one level. But it's the same idea. When once you this Kajimi or whatever his name is, has the same attitude as all the other scientists in the Frankenstein, at least the Universal Frankenstein series. He's blinded by his by his scientific desires, and that was the main thing I got out of it.
One of the notes you have here is what makes somebody human.
Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, there's that one dialogue scene between the three scientists or doctors in Frankenstein Conquers the World. And I think it's Sueko who says, like, you know, he has a heart. He is human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that is like paying homage to Shelley's novel. And I'm really glad that it's like a relatively brief dialogue scene. But I do think the movie kind of tips its hat in the novel's direction. So I appreciated that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Bill, you said it's a silly kaiju film, but it absolutely is. But I think it touches upon a lot of what Shelley wrote about in ways that more traditional Frankenstein films completely ignore.
When you're going to make a movie about Frankenstein, you know, I'm sure they read the novel Frankenstein, and it might have inspired that.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly in the novel, he's a vegetarian. He doesn't understand why humans eat meat. And I don't think that's the case here because he's trying to trap the boar to eat it. He eats dogs and things like that. But it is touched upon in a way that very, very few adaptations ever do.
He eats very little of a rabbit because he leaves so much
he
of that
so rabbit. Much of that rabbit there.
There's rabbit everywhere.
Not a fan of gamey meat.
He's like, oh, yeah. Awesome, Pfeffer. I thought this was going to be.
One other main Frankenstein theme that I just thought of now in our discussion is those themes of isolation and loneliness.
Yeah.
And trying to find your place in this world. Others like you, too. How the original monster, he wants a mate because he needs someone who is like him. And there were two moments in this film that I find devastating. The most devastating one to me is when Frankenstein emerges from the water and he comes upon the ferry and there are teenagers dancing on the ferry and he wants to be with them, but he can't.
Right.
And Honda keeps the camera on Frankenstein's face. It's lit in a really ghastly way. It looks kind of goofy, but there's just nothing but hurt on Frankenstein's face because he can't be a part of the other kids, what they're doing. They're having fun.
Right.
But then what does he do? He just lightly pushes on the side of him to sort of say, get out of here. He doesn't kill him. I mean, I think that's essential to his character. He not only doesn't kill them, but later it's a kind of a moving scene. The guy that wants to cut off any part of him he can possibly get a hold of, and he rescues him and lays him, you know, quietly, gently. Yeah, he's a good guy, our Frankenstein.
I know.
Yeah, and the actor who plays him, he's very good. He could have played Frankenstein in a straight adaptation done in Japan, I think, and pulled it off. He's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's asked to do not only that, but wrestling, right?
Yeah. It's a kaiju. Yeah, he's got to wrestle with a guy in a big rubber mattress. So,
which, like, when we talk about the guy who played Godzilla, he's not asked to do those the same thing that this guy's asked
exactly,
to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. It's almost like two different movies on that level.
Yep.
What'd you all think about the special effects and sort of the aesthetic as a whole?
They're kind of hit or miss. Like, I feel like at their best, they are kind of like, they have a sense of childlike wonder, and like the enthusiasm and imagination of the special effects are pretty convincing, or at least maybe not convincing, but like convey the world of the film or whatever. Like, I think all the stuff with Frankenstein and like the size disparity, for example, like when everybody's outside of his cell and then we see him sort of like hunched over as a giant in his cell, I think that works great. Yeah, and like, so, you know, I love the model sets in a lot of other kaiju films, like Gamera versus Gauss, I was thinking of because we just watched that sort of recently, and I love the sort of like green lit cave with like this weird neon light everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I could have done with like a little bit more of that in this movie, just like weird eye popping colors and like angles, like out of a German expressionist movie or something.
It almost feels like it's going to do that at the beginning, because at that when the guy's trashing his Reisenberg or whatever is trashing his lab, all of a sudden orange lights pop up in the back, like Creepshow or something. Yeah.
Well, and he's acting like he's in a silent movie too. He's all over the place.
Yeah. And even like the image right before that of like, you know, it's World War II and we have like there are like searchlights and like there's a lot of like ash or maybe it's snow or something in the air. There's like very weird lighting.
The opening shots panning through their models, but it's, you know,
very effective
of, you know, demolished just rubble and things jutting out at odd angles. And it really sets the tone and it sets the place really well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that opening. I wish there had been maybe a little bit more of that later in the film as well. Yeah, they're hit or miss, but overall really, really effective, I think.
And I think because it's makeup on an actor for Frankenstein and it's not a big rubber suit, and nobody is a bigger fan of big rubber suits than I am, but I think it gives it another dimension, which we had mentioned before. And I think, that's one area where maybe War of the Gargantuas could have benefited, is to have a little bit less on the actors' faces. Then they could have emoted a little bit stronger.
Yeah. What I like about this movie is a lot of the dark graphic shots, and they're really quick. Like with the rabbit, the butchered rabbit that the kids find, just those like little blips of horror. I was really into, but overall, I really like the grounded thematic messages that Honda's going for, coupled with Tsuburaya's more over the top kaiju effects.
So this movie is kind of, it really changes what it is throughout the movie. So it's kind of starts out as one thing and then it becomes something else. And then it ends as something completely different. It becomes a kaiju battle at the end. And as a result, that doesn't match so well with some of the stuff that happens in the middle portion. But you have like a sequence where a little kid gets run over by a car, and it's played from one angle as a static shot, and you watch him run off without one of his shoes.
He gets up and it's very painful the way he gets up. It clearly hurts.
Yeah. And so this movie is very evocative. It's very sympathetic to Frankenstein. We have to call out his name. But like I said, it's a little kid getting run over by a car. That doesn't matter that he's Frankenstein at that point. And I think that's where the strengths for me are, you know, probably in the first half or two thirds. I really love the whole thing. But the first two thirds for me, that stuff's really effective.
I think just visually, yeah, there's a lot of really striking things in it. Like I said, the climax with that vivid orange wall of fire behind all this stuff going on. It brought up, there's a Hammer film, Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, that has a fiery climax that it reminded me of in a good way. And it has that horror aspect because of that. The lighting will shift from very flat normal lighting when people are talking and things like that to very moody horror lighting when the hand is crawling along the floor. Yeah. It's very, for a silly kaiju film, it's very carefully crafted, as most of them were by Honda. It has more mature themes than any number of Frankenstein, straight up Frankenstein films that, you know, let's be honest, the Universal ones get really silly really fast. Yeah. And, you know, they owe absolutely nothing to Mary Shelley after the third or fourth film. Whereas this, like Bill said, they had clearly read the book, or at least were acutely aware of what its themes were. And it does tend to, in the history of these films, get sort of the short shrift as sort of the, well, it was made, and then this better film was made as a sequel. But I don't agree. I think there's a lot here to like, and a lot here that elevates it above most of the standard kaiju stuff.
Yeah, I strongly agree with everything that's been brought up already. I'll just bring up one more. So it's my favorite edit in the entire movie, and I think this is a good example of, Tom, you were just talking about the craftsmanship in this film and Honda's craftsmanship in general, Ishiro Honda. Mm-hmm. But my favorite edit is a cut from it's like a microscopic close-up. I think they're looking at some cells. Maybe it's a Frankenstein taken from, I could be wrong about that. But anyway, it's a cut from like a microscopic close-up. The doctor, Sekuo, is that her name? The female doctor?
Saika.
Yeah. So it's a cut from her looking into a microscope to like an extreme close-up of Frankenstein's eyes when he's like hiding in the bushes on like a city.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a really jarring moment. Both mm-hmm. shots are extremely beautiful. And mm-hmm. I just thought that was like such a perfect scene transition and like an example of how Honda, whenever he kind of like changes scenes or changes settings, like he thinks about, you know, like pacing and rhythm and stuff like that. Yep. Just a really incredible moment. And I was very captivated by that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What did you guys not like about this movie?
I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. I mean, I bought this DVD ages ago when it first came out, and I only just watched it this week. And I was expecting like, okay, well, you know, this is second tier, but I ended up liking it a lot. So in terms of the bad, you know, some of the rinky-dink effects, the boar and the horse, but I understand why they are what they are.
It's a little bit slow in the middle. But even you seem to say it's not all that bad.
Yeah.
But I personally, that's the part that works for me. So that to me, it was more once we actually get to the kaiju fight, which a lot of people are waiting for when you watch kaiju movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as a genre, the kind of group of people who are going to sit and watch kaiju films, you're waiting for these big fights. And I'm maybe not in this film. I was perfectly happy to sit in it. So anyways, again, we're talking about the bad, so I want to focus on that. That's so then when the kaiju fight happened, for the rest of the movie to sort of stop at that point was a little disappointing for me. That was a little jarring.
Yeah, just real quick, that's kind of my main qualm, Bill, is just I understand Baragon is there as a foil. He has to be there so blame can be wrongly placed mm-hmm. on Frankenstein. But I felt at times it was a little maybe obligatory. Yes. I think I would have just loved a straight Frankenstein film.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, here's Baragon again.
Yeah. I think Baragon is almost awkwardly introduced too. It just sort of comes out of nowhere. And what I found funny is Bowen knows that, he refers to him as Baragon, and nobody has ever, it's just all of a sudden that's its name. I thought that was kind of weird. Bowen knows that it's Baragon.
Yeah, I'll just say that I second, or I guess third or fourth, everything that everybody else said in the bad category. There's really not a lot that's bad here. This, you know, it sounds absurd. I realize that my criticism is ridiculous from the start, but just like, I get, you know, I just mentioned the illogic or the illogicality of the film. I guess I was, you know, at first, for maybe the first like 20 or 30 minutes, I was like, wait a minute, like what, how is this Frankenstein's monster? Or how is this Frankenstein? Like, did this entire body just like grow around the heart? Like, I failed to kind of like grasp.
Yeah,
that,
that's one thing that's not made clear. And I think that's the assumption.
Yeah, they ask the question like, well, how did he grow up all by himself in the rubble of Hiroshima? Some guy asks, basically. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, he's Frankenstein.
He's so Frankenstein. What do you want?
That's what he does.
Yeah, like it is a very absurd criticism to try to find like logic in this storyline in particular. Sure. But I was,
yeah,
for a while I was like, where are we? Who is this character? But yeah, and I agree that maybe some of the kaiju stuff is a little bit disappointing. Like there's the great scene which starts with like a tracking shot across a model set. It's on Mount Fuji and there are a bunch of like campers and some tents and stuff like that. And then Barragan shows up and he starts causing mayhem, and then the scene just like fades to black maybe like 30 seconds in. And it's like, what, why cut that scene? Like that you're, he's in the middle of his rampage. Like I wanted to see that.
It's just, it's just to keep you, keep Barragan in front of the audience so they know that he's still there. But yeah, it is awkward. Well, like Bill said, in the when they decide to go visit the grave of the girl that died, and they're like, "Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. I'll pack a lunch. This will be great." That's a little weird. It's not in the U.S. print. That's a little out there. The fact that Bowen has to put an American flag on to cook steaks is a little, little, you know, but whatever.
Yeah, that was my one campy moment. I was like, oh, Bowen is, he's an American in case nobody knew.
In case the blonde hair and the American voice didn't tip you off.
The new, his New York dialect is priceless. I just love.
I like Nick Adams.
But he's great in this and in Invasion of Astro Monster.
Yeah, I think he's great.
I thought Barragan was a little clunky in this one. If I had to, he's a little silly sometimes. I mean, like he, when he does the thing with his eyes move back and forth.
That's goofy.
So I don't know if that's campy or just because it goes on for a while. It's like 10 seconds of him looking back. Maybe it's 4 seconds. Oh, and the feathers. I'm sorry.
The feathers.
I forgot about the feathers. The feathers. That was what I was going to say about Barragan. Because he's big. I don't know if you know this, but he's a giant monster. And he eats the little tiny chickens. And the feathers are
gigantic. Feathers.
They must be the biggest chicken.
I think there are some great dubbed lines in the English dubbed version of this movie, which I would put in the campy category. There are a lot of them, but my favorite is when two kids come back to their house, which is destroyed, I think, by Barragan's attack.
Yeah.
And one of the kids says, "Oh, our house is wrecked," in like the least dramatic or like just possible. Very matter of fact. Oh, our house is wrecked.
Oh, our house is wrecked.
If you live in a world full of kaiju, you're like, oh, now about time.
Just another day. Yeah. I definitely loved that moment a lot. And then just like the number of bucket hats in this movie, it's actually probably not really all that many, but there's one moment when Dr. Bowen and Suoke, the two of them are wearing bucket hats, and it's just totally unexpected. That moment made me laugh a lot. It's great. So we have four ratings here on Camp Kaiju. Our highest rating is it is a timeless classic and stands the test of time. Our second highest rating is there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and stands the test of time. Our second lowest is it may be historically significant or just fun, but does not stand the test of time. And last and also least, our worst rating, it is not worth revisiting and definitely does not stand the test of time.
Okay. I think we can let our esteemed guests go first.
Oh, you have esteemed guests coming on. Well,
then
we'll
step aside to drop. Let them.
You were just the warm-up.
That's usually the case. Well, I would put it somewhere between it's a timeless classic and there may be some antiquated moments. I enjoyed it way more than I was expecting to. And took a lot more away from it than I ever expected.
I don't know how popular this decision will be, but I'm just going to say it's a timeless classic because I was so surprised by so much of what it offered, from the World War II stuff to the, you know, the visuals of having that monster watching him grow up from a little boy that gets run over in the street to finally sinking beneath the earth during that battle. Oh, I mean, sorry, getting thrown into the ocean by an octopus.
By an octopus.
I'm giving it the full grade. I mean, I don't know how popular that's going to be, but it's how it affected me. Yeah.
I love it. I love that rating. Yeah. I think for me, I'll have to go with our second highest rating. You know, I think the kaiju stuff does seem a little bit obligatory. Like Vincent said, that part doesn't work quite as well for me. Mm-hmm. But thematically, it's there's so much to this movie. It's so bizarre. Like, it's a weird mashup of two seemingly incompatible kind of worlds that do actually mesh together pretty well. And when I first saw it, there were some things that I wasn't sure that I liked. But just in this conversation tonight, made me like it a lot more. So I'm not going to give it our highest rating, but definitely stands the test of time, I think.
I'm going to have to split my decision too. I think it's a personally, I think it's a timeless classic. It's underrated for sure. And I think everybody should watch this immediately. But objectively speaking, there were some jarring moments where the special effects didn't quite work for me. They didn't, you know, age as well as maybe you'd expect. Certainly from other kaiju films at this time, I feel like have effects that do age better. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's a classic that should be on everyone's radar.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to watch it again, you know, sometime soon.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it minute by minute.
Start, only a matter of time. Started on Sunday.
Thank you so much for coming on. Certainly. Camp Kaiju.
Thanks for having us. Putting up with our ridiculous antics.
Yeah, no, it was my pleasure. Yeah, it was our pleasure.
Yeah, and
you introduced me to this film. Yeah, I wouldn't have watched it without
you
this.
You made me watch a film that I hadn't seen since I was a kid and took so much more away from it than I ever thought I would.
I'm grateful.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. This was a really fun conversation. I love the energy that you guys brought. It's fun, but also, you know, we kind of dug into it a little bit, so it was great.
I've got to ask, who is the friend of yours? He told Matt and I about your podcast.
Oh, Jason, my friend Jason Tucker.
Jason, shout out to Jason.
Shout out to Jason. He would love it if I would mention his Doctor Who convention. That's every January. People will forget this because it's 11 months away. But he runs a really great Doctor Who convention in Bloomington. And I'm always on a ton of panels over there, and we always have a really great time. So it's called Console Room. It's at console-room.com if anybody's interested in a Doctor Who convention in the Twin Cities. That's the main thing about Jason. And he goes to movies, even when they don't announce what the movie's going to be.
I admire that.
Eternally thankful. And thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Patreon/CampKaiju, or Instagram for more monster movie content. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. And before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts, and as Camp Kaiju says, thanks again, friends. Until next time, stay campy.
Starring Nick Adams.
Well, I feel he's very important from a scientific point of view.
I'd have to cut off a leg or an arm.
Doctors, I won't let you conduct this test.
Frankenstein, with the strength of 1,000 men. And every man's need for affection that makes him a willing captive.
The chain hurts you.
The new scoop of the century. The horrifying touch of a severed hand with a life of its own. The terrifying force of a monster that dwarfs man's tallest structures.